Are you done fixing the telescope? Because our oxygen is low.
No, and you know, I still don't understand why I was called up here to fix the Hubble Space Telescope. I'm a veterinary assistant back home. I'm lactose intolerant, I am way out of shape, and I am extremely depressed. Why didn't I fail all the examinations?
That's the shutdown. A lot of the usual people are not available. Also, remember, you agreed to do this just for gift cards.
When you're depressed, you go to Chili's. A lot. You'd be surprised how expensive that gets. Also, nobody told me space was in 3D. I hate 3D. Everything looks weird and way too close. Like that thing that's whizzing towards us right now. What was that?
It's the guys over at the Russian space station. They think it's really funny to, you know, do a number two and throw it out into space.
Who do they think they are? I mean, I expect that from Yaleys, but not cosmonauts. Okay, now I am definitely getting dizzy.
It's the oxygen. You have to sip it, not gulp it. Think wine, not beer.
No, it's the 3D. 3D is making me sick. Why couldn't I do this in 2001 when space was still in 2D? Today on the show, we're in New Haven to find out why Yale is the number one, number two school in America, and maybe buy a used tennis tournament, too. And now, in Gravity, he plays the weightless nut, Colin McEnroe.
Yeah, did you see the weightless nut that's floating there? That's me, actually, in a costume. All right, so we're down in the Audubon Street Studios of WNPR here in New Haven to do the nose, which we've done, I think, maybe once before. And it's so I'm sitting in Faith Middleton's chair, and I just have to really say a word about this studio. This studio fascinates me because it doesn't really represent a particular era of radio technology. It's more like what an Italian science fiction writer in 1926 thought radio would be in 1984. So there are like lots of pieces of technology here. They don't really actually go together. They don't.
It's
really
nothing
look,
I can really even put my finger on.
Bruce Barber is here. He's worked in radio for many years. It's not.
I've never seen anything like it.
No, there is nothing like it. It actually is the. I mean, I feel very confident in saying this is the only radio studio of its kind anywhere in the world.
It's like part office, part living room.
It's a Franken studio.
It's a Franken
studio. It's a Franken studio.
All right. Since you're hearing their voices, I'm going to introduce the panelists on the nose today. Bruce Barber is Bruce Barber. No other explanation is really needed. Jose Antonio Candelario is a comedian, comic performer here in New Haven, an entertainer.
Thank you. Yes.
Vinnie Klein is a psychotherapist. And boy, do we need one. She's the author of Blows to the Head, How Boxing Changed My Mind, and a host of A Miniature World on WPKN, a music and interview show. So that's who's here. Let me tell you some of the things we'll be talking about today. And as we go along, we invite you to talk along with us. Although you have to call up at a different number today because we are repping the 203.
Very well said.
As you young people say, Jose.
Yes.
We're repping the 203. So it's 203-776-WNPR. Is that right, Jonathan? Yeah. 203-776-WNPR.
Actually, I believe the way we should put it is we're Yale repping the 203.
Well, we'll be talking about Yale right off the top here. And I'll set that up in just a second. Some of the other things we'll be talking about as we go along here. In fact, we will talk a little bit about sort of the fact that now when you go to the movies, you have to make a hierarchy of choices. Do I want 3D? Do I want 2D? Do I want IMAX? Do I want regular size screen? Do I want to just wait for it to come out so I can watch it on my TV set? And what are the implications of all that? You may have also seen today that here in New Haven, there's a tennis tournament, and not right now, there isn't a tennis tournament, but there is a tennis tournament.
Thank God.
And in a few weeks, you, the taxpayer, will own it. So we'll talk about that a little bit if we have time. Also, we may talk about, Benny has suggested we talk about the sort of rising complexity, sophistication, and competitiveness of Halloween costumes, something which I have noted. And, you know, it almost kind of forces you out of the game sometimes. You're just, you know, you can't be good enough.
Let me say this. That's a lot of bullet points.
That's a lot of bullet points. Yeah.
Well, the agenda is long. How
exactly.
Much time do we have?
The big agenda. And then towards the end, our panelists will endorse various things. Meanwhile, we have to start with this, even though bringing this up in the presence of Bruce Barber, and I'm thinking maybe also Jose, is a risk, you know? I mean, but there's no way not to talk about it because it actually has become kind of a national phenomenon. And this is, of course, the story of the perpetrator, as he is known. This is someone who, there's just no other way to say it. He has been, well, I mean, I think we like to think that he's defecating into the laundry machines. That may not be the case. He may be creating this elsewhere. And,
I just want to say that this is an inside job. Okay,
Everybody here has alibis. We went over that pretty carefully beforehand. But anyway, so he
wash my hands of this.
Yeah, at the see how much trouble we're in already at the laundry machines, dorm laundry machines, mainly at Saybrook College, I guess at Yale University, one of the many residential colleges here. Somebody took it upon himself to leave waste inside the laundry machines. And it just has, you should pardon the expression, exploded into this huge story. There seemed to be sort of a copycat crime in which somebody set up a laundry line on the Yale campus and hung soiled garments on it. Those turned out to have been soiled with chocolate, which suggests it's not the work of the perpetrator, who does not.
It was the work of Bill Murray.
Yeah. So there's sort of a lot going on, and in fact, it's also kind of gone viral. There's just a ton of stuff all over the social media, so much so that the household bleach brand Clorox jumped in and started tweeting about the using the perpetrator hashtag. They even have a little picture with a Clorox bleach bottle behind the glass that says "Break glass in case of poo emergency." So it just indicates that. No, I promise you. By the way, all the people who are like getting ready to call and complain about this topic, so we're not going to dwell on it excessively. But there's no way
we're
not
reporting
to talk
the
about
news.
It. Yeah, there's no way to talk. Not
this
to talk
is news,
about
right? When did this news story, Colin, first emerge?
I mean, I believe last week sometime. Actually, Jonathan McNichol, who's producing today, has been following it very closely, as he tends to do with things like this. But yeah, I think sometime last week, although it's been going, it happened during the month of September in particular. That was when the perpetrator first.
And I'm wondering which news outlet broke the story.
The Yale Daily.
Yale Daily News
jumped on this, and then everybody got on it. Benny is the only grown up here in the room. I feel as though we wouldn't be talking about this if it were happening at the University of Michigan or Texas or maybe even Stanford. I don't know. There's something about the fact that it's happening at Yale, don't you think?
Not at all. In fact, I think this is giving the listener a really depraved perception of New Haven.
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. So let's just put that on the record and say, like, oh, how unfortunate this topic is. But since it's in the news, say a couple of things about the nature of pranks.
Right.
I mean, pranks throughout the ages, you know, there's been the college pranks and there's been like 20 clowns in a Volkswagen and put everybody in the sorority in the phone booth. This one is so primal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, what's up with that? And second, and you two can debate this, as three of you, would you rather go to your laundry and see this horrible defecation, this grotesque invasion, or be catfished?
We should explain that catfished. Well, you explain what catfished
means. No, I'll try. So it started with this movie where some enterprising indie filmmaker seemed to have fallen in love with someone online. Mm-hmm. You know, one of those kinds of things, like sight unseen. And then he does a trip to meet her, and she's not at all what he expected. And that's happened in a couple of other famous cases.
And they've now turned it into an actual reality show hosted by that filmmaker, and so catfishing.
Yes.
That notion. What was? Are you suggesting then that that so much of what goes on these days that's either troubling or fraudulent or invasive goes on in this very digital and therefore ultimately kind of sterile way, and that one of the reasons that our attention is focused on this particular act is that it's primal? It kind of returns us to our roots, so to speak.
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
And just like you said, you know, the digitization of pranks and torture, if you will, and psychological manipulation is so nuanced and so subtle and scary and pervasive. So this is just out there.
Well,
this is just ridiculous.
I think she wins
there.
some kind of NPR award for managing to sort of laminate this disgusting topic
elevated it
with a highbrow explanation.
Your name is now actually, the high road is now Benny Klein.
If you only knew.
Yeah. No, that was really great. And of course, I'll just ask you one more question since you're a psychotherapist too. I mean, Freud, of course, talks about sort of the nature of excrement, what it means. And one of the things he talks about is money being a symbolic system.
That is exactly right. Feces as gold.
Right.
So what does this say about, are the Yale students squandering their privilege?
Well, I mean, just another quick thing about this, and one thing I did circulate around, and this has gotten a lot of national coverage. So in Time magazine, Jessica Roy was writing about it and making fun of the fact that somebody's pooping on everybody's Ralph Lauren khakis and polo, you know. And then she says, pray for the Yaleys. This is the first bit of suffering they ever endured. And this touched off this string of really kind of virulent responses on the comment threads of Time magazine. This is where she wrote it. She wrote it in Time magazine. On their online comments, there are all these people saying, well, we're not, you know, a lot of us aren't. They were just really offended by the idea that, like, they had this coming or something.
See, I really think this is, I personally think this is a Yale thing. This is the fact that, okay, this happened at Yale. And the example I will use, you're too young for this, but Colin
pointed to me.
Yeah, that's right. To Vinny.
He's exactly. Pointing at Jose. We discovered that Jose was born roughly when, you know, various major developments in our adult lives were taking place.
Exactly. Right? It was about the same time that pocket lint went into my right pocket. But anyways, so I hearken back to an episode of Gilligan's Island, and I was telling my son about this, that are you familiar with this television show, Gilligan's Island?
Yes. Pretend.
Sit right there. Yeah. Sit okay, right there, so, and let me tell you a tale.
Okay, so you know Thurston Howell III.
Oh, yes.
And Lovey, and Thurston Howell went to he was a Harvard man.
Yes, he was.
And what happened in one episode was they found out there was actually a native, a savage on the island.
A savage.
And the savage jumped down in front of Thurston Howell III, and he said, "A Yaley!" So I just think this is, you know, this is we've fallen victim to the fact that people have this lofty impression of Yale University that is not the case. Mm-hmm. And this, because it happened here, to answer your question, I think if this happened at the University of Michigan or someplace that, like, you wouldn't have heard.
People like the fact that it's happening here.
Exactly.
It's so much at odds with Yale's own image of itself. I see this, by the way, as a Yale person who graduated from Yale 1 year before Jose Antonio Candelario was born. But I did graduate from Yale at that time. By the way, if you want to chime in about this, we're not going to be staying with the Poopadrator very long. So if you've got something to say, get it out right now, as I say. The number is 203-776-WNPR. If you're calling the usual number, you're not getting anywhere. You might be talking to Kion Wolf, but you're not going to get it on the air. 203-776-WNPR. We're down here in New Haven repping the 203. So I don't know if there's anything else to say about this, except that, Jose, I do want to say, as I came down here today, because I've been reading the coverage, and you know how it is, you read about something, you know, and in the media, and it takes root in your mind, and then you think you start to kind of blow it out of proportion. So I've been here in New Haven for a while. I've parked my car. I walked. No one has assailed me in this way. No one. So we should say that New Haven, you know, in general, people don't do
this. Well, it's just, look, you're not doing your laundry.
We know what to do with our poop here in New Haven, okay? Just because one person found a new use for their poop, it could have been an act of revenge, it could have been an act of defiance, who knows?
See, that's right.
The rest of
right.
us know right. to put the poop in the water that's in that little porcelain piece in our little room called the bathroom.
That's what I call repping the 203 right there.
But I do think, yeah, it does sound like some act of – we don't know the backstory, but that sounds like an act of aggression about somebody.
Someone cheated on someone. Someone took someone's girlfriend. That's right. Someone took someone's lunch. What happens
in the dorm
room?
The thing is, this is just like a message we've never really experienced before. Right. You know, like it's generally other things. It's other kinds of threats.
But it's also we burn poop on people's doorsteps.
That was old school.
That's
like
old school
bag,
in your days. In your days, right? In your days, that's what you guys did.
That was the height of hilarity. You lit it on fire around this time of year, correct?
Right.
You rang the doorbell. You ran away.
I've personally never done that, I just want to say.
Neither have I. I've just heard about it. It's like an urban legend.
There's some people thought I did it to Kingman Brewster. Absolutely not the case while I was here. That was somebody else. All right. So I think we're going to move on. I think we may have explored the Poopadrator for
excuse me, Colin, where's the bathroom?
All right. Exactly. I should have thought about that before we went on there. So Benny brought up
number two, right?
As we're sort of getting ready, we're kind of emailing around, and Benny has some interesting ideas. One of them is she says, you know, the movie Gravity is breaking box office records. Some say it's dizzying, especially in 3D. And you were sort of bringing up that whole question, which you got me thinking, too. About the question of, but I saw Gravity last night in 3D, and it is the case now. But Patrick, our producer Patrick Scahill, saw it in 3D IMAX.
Ooh.
Man.
And it is now the case with many movies that come out. You sort of have to make a decision about sort of what scale you're going to seek and what sort of experience you're going to have. So I'm taking away your setup. I'll let you set up this topic your own way.
Okay. You're so kind. I don't know. One of my sisters said that she saw it and that she was profoundly affected by it. And the first thing I said, having read some of the reviews, was, is it going to make me nauseous? Like, is it going to give me vertigo? And these are people falling in space, which is, occurs to me, is like kind of like a bit of a trope in science fiction, you know, where the idea of tumbling outside the spaceship and being cut loose, I don't know, is it a metaphor or something? But it's very unnerving. Like, we'd all hate to be just cast,
into space alone?
So I was thinking, should I see it? She said, well, you should, because there's some very good existential aspects to this film that you don't want to miss, and the performances are incredible. And so you kind of have to choose your battles of what you're willing to endure. Mm-hmm. My husband, for example, if he watches a film where somebody's up in a tree and they're looking down over Vista, he will feel a sense of what you might call disequilibrium, if that's a word.
Then they should add that to the MPAA warnings, too.
Warning
contains people in trees looking down.
Exactly. Or philosophizing in trees. But 3D, I mean, that's even harder. That stuff's like coming at you. And it makes – I don't think I'd want to see it in 3D. I mean, did you find it disturbing bad? Or
I have my own – I'll just quickly – I want to hear Bruce and Jose if they have thoughts about this. I will say that I have had experiences that made me question the kinds of choices that you're talking about. I would say my most extreme experience of this was – that I saw the most recent Mission Impossible movie in an IMAX format. And if you recall that movie, there's a period in the movie where Tom Hanks is in the tallest building in the world, this building in Dubai. And at times he's kind of swinging out on to the side of it and barely anchored. And, you know, there are these very vertiginous shots. This was not a 3D movie. But I was really having a problem. You know, I mean, I was sort of squirming around in my chair and trying to find, like, a place that I could be where I wasn't. You know, having this horrible tingling sensation sweeping over my body.
Not to interrupt, but I should point out it was Tom Cruise, not Tom Hanks.
Did I say Tom Hanks?
Yes, I just checked it.
Well,
they at least stick together.
Right. Who was it the other day who said Tom Cruise when he met Ted Cruz?
I would like to see Tom Hanks in the Mission Impossible films, however.
All right. So Tom.
A big building in Dubai.
Or Ted Cruz.
Right.
Or Ted Cruz.
Dangling over a building. I'm sorry.
But squirming, kind of like, you know, and having that sort of, that obviously having the thrill that I was meant to have. But I think, as you're saying, well, you sort of want to pick and choose your thrills and some of the – by the way, this might be an interesting thing to hear from other people, either people who've seen this particular movie, Gravity, in 3D, where I feel as though, anyway, the vertiginous part of it is not as bad. But or people who sort of struggle with that choice, like how alarmed do you want to be by a movie, and just in terms of at least the way it's presented to you. The number is 203-776-WNPR, 203-776-WNPR. Yeah, Jose.
I don't want to sound like an ageist. Yeah. Because I don't know, but I don't get sick when I go to these movies.
Here we go.
Now, there are poor choices. Like, I went to see World War Z in 3D. That was a flop.
Yeah.
You know, then you got Superman. I saw that in 3D, and that was just too fast. Now, this is an homage to Kubrick. Okay? So this is what it is. Kubrick did phenomenal with space, and he built sets that were elaborate. He did not mat. Okay, now you have this new age guy who's got new technology. He's trying to do something different with it, with an homage. Now, it is campy. That's probably the worst part of the film. The way it is made digitally, I think the young guys back here, these guys look like they're younger than me, so I know they didn't have a problem with the 3D.
But I think you're right. How about this? People are now getting sick because their iPhone, like the icons. What is it now? Are we in an age of vertigo?
What do you mean people are getting sick?
You didn't hear this story?
You didn't hear this? No.
People are like, you tell.
Is it the iOS 7, the new one?
The new one, when you go from an app to a folder or back vice versa, it kind of comes out and goes in. People get dizzy from that. They were actually complaining. And I was like, what's the average age of the complainer?
That's exactly right.
I'm getting
right.
dizzy just hearing you describe that.
Well, do you know that when trains were first invented, people used to faint?
Yeah.
I mean, there are these things throughout the ages that are inventions and modes of travel that you have to get used to.
Yeah. And then this is the technology that people will get. The younger people are used to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, my daughter faces a screen. She's 5 years old. She uses the pad. She knows how to use Netflix. She watches. She does her own thing. 5 years old.
Yeah.
Okay. At 5 years old, you guys were with wooden blocks. Me, I had a Jacob's ladder.
Depressing.
I had a Jacob's ladder. Okay, so.
Well, the only thing is that your first kid? Is that, or do you have older ones?
That's too? It.
Okay, so I've got
we
older ones.
We had to
ones.
Save up to
they,
get those wooden
they
blocks.
They get to
by
the age where, like, look at the kids. They want that vertigo experience. Like, have you ever been to Disney? Have you been on, you know, the one that goes inside the roller coaster?
Yeah.
I mean, look at Patrick's going, yeah. They get off on that. And this brings me to, Colin, just your point, which is, I do think what we're talking about here is it's interesting because you have a different choice when you decide how you want to consume your entertainment.
Yes.
And I do think, and I will actually draw a weird line to the movie Platoon when I saw it way back in the day, which was that movie, the advance word, it wasn't a vertigo thing, but the word was this is going to be a very intense film experience.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, it was, aside from like Apocalypse Now, it was considered one of the most real movies about Vietnam. And I went in there and I came out of it, you know, feeling exhausted, feeling emotionally drained because Oliver Stone had brought me into that world. And I guess what I'm saying is, like, some people like up experiences, like, you know, they like the thrill rides at the amusement park, or they like a movie that puts you into battle or out in space and it makes your heart race and stuff like that. I'm generally not that person, so that wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't make that. I'd like something that's a little more accessible. But I do think it's interesting that the technology now does make it so you can have this almost more vertigo-inducing experience at the theater.
And I think Jose nailed it, too. I think there is sort of a developmental thing that's going on here that, you know, whatever you think, and Benny's point about trains, too. It's like whatever's new can be frightening. We had Andy from Waterbury on the line here. Andy called 203-776-WNPR. I had to learn a whole new phone number today. It's hard. Hi, Andy. You're on the air.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to mention that when Avatar came out, like the biggest 3D movie, you know, ever probably, I actually went to go see it three different times, one in IMAX 3D, one in 3D in a regular size screen, and then one just sort of a regular experience. And Avatar, I think, did 3D and did the big screen very, very well. And I thought I would have loved to have gone back and seen it three times in the IMAX 3D. But there have been other 3D movies that were just terrible. And
Beowulf, for example, was
exactly.
Yeah.
Can I tell you something that is so bizarre about your having just called? I'm literally right now embarrassed to say I'm halfway through Avatar for the first time. On a home 42
you're
inch.
You're halfway through. Are you reading it or something?
I start and stop.
It doesn't take that long.
I start and stop.
So I'm going to say this though. I saw the original 3D movie of our generation, Monster House, which was a kids movie. So I went out and I saw that because I'm into films. I like to watch films, and so I saw that from the beginning, the exception, and I was like odd, and I wanted more. Mm-hmm. And I've been to Avatar, and I've been to the other Avatar movies, like five Avatars. Last Airbender, and then there's Avatar. Mm-hmm. So I went to Last Airbender, horrible, you know. And I really enjoy the movies, but in this one, I think it's more campy because some of the stuff is just not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene in it that you probably, you know, we won't mention it, but it was, you know, there was a professional saying that's impossible. The chance of that happening is literally astronomical for them to do what they've done in that movie.
Right.
So that part of it, yes, it was cheesy. Well,
The movie has a lot of unrealistic things. In fact, it turns out that the International Space Station, the Hubble Telescope, and the Chinese space station are basically kind of a long cab ride from one another, which I don't think is really true out there in outer space. It's like maybe a $25 cab ride to get the farthest one of them to the you know. I just quickly want to say, because just what you guys are saying, I had an experience of that this week, which is there's some people who I know who are in a movie club. Like, they watch movies kind of the way people are in book clubs. They'll watch older movies usually and then gather and have dinner and discuss these movies. And so one of the members suggested the Ken Russell movie Women in Love, which is based on this D.H. Lawrence novel, which you remember. And at the time that when it came out, because of Ken Russell's really incredibly vivid shooting and the fact that it had all these kind of earthy scenes of people running through forests, and then, of course, invariably people talk about the naked wrestling scene of...
Now, I'd like to see that in 3D.
Yeah, you know, there's two guys heterosexually nakedly wrestling in front of a fireplace. It's Oliver Reed and Alan Bates.
You can watch that at Borat.
Right. So, but anyway, I ran into a whole bunch of them yesterday, and the people who are in this movie club. And they were going, And I said, really? Because I remember walking out of this movie and my mind was blown. You know, visually my mind was blown. Mentally my mind was blown. Sexually my mind was blown. They're going, nah, not really anymore. No. And I'm thinking some of it was they watched it probably on DVDs or on a Netflix download or something like that. But some of it also is that question of what is vivid. It's what Jose is saying. It's what is vivid at any given moment.
I just want to say I was blown away by Avatar just on the little TV screen. And
you want to know how it comes out?
but seriously, I mean, just when I think of what the technology has created now, you know, and you're talking, you know, a kid who grew up with a black and white television set with three channels or five channels
and wooden blocks, dude.
And wooden blocks. But it really is phenomenal, and I just love it. As a busy parent for all these years, you know, I never had time. I don't go to the movies that often.
Right.
I want to say this about the 3D because I did bring up the topic. I think there's a difference between being emotionally excited and disturbed possibly by a film. So that I would put in the category of something like having, how permeable is your psyche? Mm. Like, I don't want to see serial killers. You know, that's where I draw the line. You know, torture scenes. Versus viscerally.
Or maybe neurologically.
Yeah. 15% of people, they report, get nausea and headaches from 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 15%. Now, I don't know whether it's an age thing, as you said, Jose, or not. We'll discuss that later in the 15%? Parking lot.
I want to know the demographic.
But yeah, right. Okay. So, but the thing is, 3D just keeps pushing the envelope. And, you know, some people wonder whether it's being pushed so much because Hollywood is in trouble.
Well,
like often, you know, in terms of how many movies are being rolled out in 3D, I enjoy some of it. I think it's a children's medium primarily, but I do enjoy it. I really liked Caroline, you know, which was from a children's storybook. I liked Hugo, the Scorsese thing. It was really an homage to other films. Mm-hmm. They've been trying to do 3D since the 20s. Did you know that?
Yes.
Did you know that Dial M for Murder by Hitchcock,
yes,
he made it in 3D. When he looked at it, he said, this is horrible, and he released it in 2D. But since the 50s, we've had all this weird, like, House of Wax and stuff like that. But some of it works and some of it doesn't.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We have one last comment from Jose, and then we have to go to break.
I want to just say this. You know, it's just all about variety. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember gathering around the radio to get your information. Okay, we're in age now.
Of course we do.
I think you think we're much older than we are.
No, I'm sorry. But what I'm trying to say is that it's true that there is more variety and people have to grab your attention with something. And 3D technology, this is not your 70s B-horror movies 3D. Okay, this is really, really well
painterly.
Done.
Painterly. It's
artistic.
Yeah.
So that's just, I mean, variety is what people want, and they've got to do something to get your attention, to get you in those seats, because movie tickets are down.
I just want to say, Jose, eventually the joke is going to be on you, because there's going to be a post-apocalyptic scenario in which all that will be left are these, you know, highly metaphorical puppet shows that are, you know, actually staged inside wooden blocks. That'll be all that's left. And it won't be bothering to us, but you're going to feel very, very cheated media-wise. All right, we have to take a quick break. We'll come back. We're going to talk about, would you like to buy a used tennis tournament from this town? We're in New Haven.
Like Avatar, three dimensions all the way. Three glasses, swag, that's how I be doing my thing. Got all my pimped out homies in my...
You just heard Mr. Dankowski mention that he's going to be hosting the Big Shot National Show, Science Friday, today. And I can apropos the conversation we were just having here. Peter Higgs, the person whose name is applied to the Higgs boson and who won the Nobel Prize for it this week, is in his 80s. And when the Swedish Academy tried to contact him to tell him he'd won the Nobel Prize, they couldn't reach him. He doesn't have a cell phone and he does not use a computer. He has no email or anything. about. So they couldn't.
Funny,
they couldn't even tell him that he'd won the Nobel Prize.
Wild.
He's so old school. All right. So let's grab one more quick comment on 3D, and then we want to move on and make sure we have time at least to talk about the tennis tournament and maybe some other stuff as well. I want to mention here with us is Bruce Barber, who needs no introduction. He is Bruce Barber. Benny Klein, psychotherapist, radio show host. Jose Antonio Candelario, comedian, a comic performer, entertainer. They're all New Haven people, and we're in the New Haven studios of WNPR. Here's Michael from Greenwich. He's on the line. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, hi, Colin. Hi, Colin. Thanks very much for taking my call. I just wanted to respond to the idea that 3D is really kind of a child medium. I'm not sure that I agree with that. I'm 21, so I have sort of seen 3D move forward, and I love the movies. I went to the movies and saw Rush with my parents over the weekend. I think that 3D, you know, it sort of has this little stigma kind of surrounding it where it gets put in kids' movies or things like The Avengers. It's with comic book movies. But I've seen the advances. You know, I think the first 3D movie I remember seeing was My Bloody Valentine. It was absolutely atrocious. And now I see movies, and they really enhance some movies. They enhance the movie-going experience. And I think that there's a lot that can be done with it. And I think that 3D is really going to start kind of bringing out more in movies as we move forward.
Great point, Michael. Thanks for your call. You sound like a fine young person, a person we could trust around a laundry machine, which we found out you can't with everybody. All right. So
he does work for the 3D Association of America.
He does.
By
not
the way,
either.
It's a lobbying group.
He does not either. All right. So we're in New Haven.
I wonder if 3D has a lobbying group. I bet you it does.
Oh, I'm sure they do. We're in New Haven today. We couldn't not talk a little bit about something that's sort of dead in the news as of today. I mean, sort of dead on in the news. It's not dead in the news. The administration of Governor Daniel Malloy has agreed to pay $618,000 for the rights to the Bruce Barber New Haven Open tennis tournament. So we, the taxpayers, are about to own a tennis tournament. Now, you're very fond of this tennis tournament.
And
you're,
love it.
You're a big part of this tennis tournament.
It's my favorite week of the it's my favorite week of the year.
So make the case that poor Patrick and Jonathan, their state tax withholdings from their paychecks should be used to keep a tennis tournament open here in New Haven.
Well, it generates. I'm toning the company line because
right.
I'm friends with Ann Worcester. But I believe in this that it generates an incredible amount of money for New Haven.
29 million.
Yeah,
they say.
So
they
that's
say,
right.
Okay,
and they people did say that those numbers are not firm.
They call it economic impact.
Mm. But I think it also comes to the fact, and here's again for me my favorite week of the year. This is really, if you think about it, there aren't many huge events that bring New Haven together as a community. There's Arts and Ideas. There's Worcester Square has got its festival. You know, it's mm-hmm. like there's some stuff, but this just has become, I think, really a great thing just for the city of New Haven to come together and for civic pride and everything. And so I think, some people got together, some very smart people, and it was not successful as a business venture, but it was good enough for, the city and the state to say, hey, let's, Yale got involved and, mm-hmm. Some other sponsors.
Tried,
I think it's terrific. I'm glad it's staying.
I just want to say one thing. I wish Ann Worcester would age. She's been looking the same for over 15 years.
So true.
She
it's
looks wonderful. Okay.
Jose is obsessed with age.
Yes, yeah.
No, I'm obsessed with Ann Worcester.
Yeah, me too.
She may have made some kind of bargain with the devil, but it did not include keeping the tennis tournament solvent. I don't know, Benny, do you have a take on this at all? Or?
Oh, my Lord. So I didn't know anything about this until Colin sent me the link with the information. Mm-hmm. It's because I live under a rock in Hamden.
Mm-hmm.
Hamden, a nearby suburb of New Haven.
The suburb of New Haven.
Our neighbors to the north.
But it does bring up one question, which is what's the history, and I need educating here, of government subsidies of sports?
Government subsidies of sports are nothing new. Government actually owning a sports event is, as far as anybody can tell, it's the first time it's happened in the United States. Apparently does happen elsewhere in the world, but the government actually owning a sporting event, we may have made history here in Connecticut.
Yes.
I mean, in some ways, just my own informed and crotchety perspective on this, in some ways they are protecting another public investment, and that is the $18 million that they put into this tennis stadium. If you look at it that way, then you start asking much more Faustian questions. questions about government's involvement in sports. This, by the way, is not going to cost $618,000. It's going to cost a lot more. They're going to have to pay operating expenses. They already know they're going to have to pay some operating expenses. And if things go in their usual way, they may be paying more operating expenses, which is still not to say that they shouldn't do it. But it does, to me, raise some real questions. This is, from a strictly... maybe from a more conservative point of view, you'd look at this and say, well, either it works or it doesn't, and it's losing spectators. It drew 45,000 spectators.
That's the bottom line. The bottom line is no one's going out to women's tennis. I'm going to coach Bruce Barber up. I'm going to coach him up to get him into the tournament so we can get some people into the seats. I mean, right now, I can't name one of the – because number one, I'm horrible at names. Number two, I'm horrible at foreign names. So I can't tell you
– Well, and that does answer
who
kind
is
of,
in the tournament.
And Serena Williams isn't coming here.
She's not – basically.
Well, that's exactly it too. And that answers Benny's question in a way. A little bit of the background is that this event was originally – and the stadium was built for a men's event. It was a guy named Jim Westhall who had a tournament up in Vermont that was very successful. And he had aspirations to make it a really big event. So they bonded money.
But this was when it was like Mercedes. Wasn't it like a Mercedes?
Exactly.
It was Mercedes-Benz.
Or Volvo. It was called the Volvo. And you had big sponsors. You had a big title sponsor. You could make money.
So Volvo spent all that money, and now Jose thinks it was Mercedes-Benz. That's another indication why.
Well, actually, Mercedes now does a lot of the sponsorships of tennis, so they're probably their marketing department is happy. But I guess what happened was some things happened. The tournament was never an easy sell in New Haven. I think they thought it would be you're right before the U.S. Open. The men's tournament ended up competing with a very successful event in Indianapolis. The women's tournament ended up competing with some, but Ann Worcester has drawn amazing talent. I think the situation you're in now, and it's Jose, it's what you referred to, is there are not a great number of top women's players that are household names that will bring people in. And so you do get into this situation when Serena Williams does not play or some of the other players don't play. It is harder to put people in there.
I think they assume that all the Yaleys love tennis.
We now know what the Yaleys are actually doing. Let me just quickly give out the number. We won't have a lot of time to talk about this, but if you do have a position one way or another, a thought about the fact that the state of Connecticut is about to own a tennis tournament, you can give us a call at 203-776-WNPR. That's 203-776-WNPR. Yeah, I mean, just, you know, the numbers are even for the final this year, there were only 4,000 people in this 15,000 seed stadium. I mean, every time you want to make this look like a bad idea, all you have to do is run one of those overhead shots of the stadium when it's sort of not even remotely full. And then the question becomes, well, if it's not working, then, you know, if it's not really succeeding on its own merits. I mean, this isn't a lot of money for the state to spend compared to what the state spends on other stuff. It's not a lot of money.
And again, even if you argue the $30 million, it does have I see it. I mean, you've got the hotels are booked up, the restaurants are thriving, you've got stuff going on. So,
and I will say this about just sporting in general. I mean, plenty of towns and municipalities built stadiums for football teams. Okay? They build them out of tax dollars to keep that team in the city. Mm-hmm. That's all we're doing here. It's just a different sport. So it's not like it hasn't been done before. This is just a state taking it over versus a city building like the Staples Center or something, you know, just to keep, you know, a football team.
And I think it bears noting also that the plan is that the state doesn't carve out a few office buildings, you know, a few offices up in the Capitol. They will set up a separate, I guess, not-for-profit entity
It's being done through the CRDA, which is actually a kind of a quasi-public agency that was initially set up for the redevelopment of Hartford. I mean, if you want to talk about, you know, a really costly public investment that still hasn't borne fruits, the CRDA, which is now about to take over New Haven's tennis, was set up to, among other things, do Adrian's Landing, which was a $1 billion public money investment, which existed entirely for the purpose of generating revenue, not from itself, but from other kinds of commercial enterprises that would theoretically spring up around it and become property tax producers and revenue producers, and which, you know, 13 years in are just barely, almost in a very kind of creaky way, beginning to do. So, I mean, by the scale of Adrian's Landing, which is the sort of signature hallmark product of the CRDA, $1.4 million or whatever that's going to cost over the next 2 years to do this lousy thing in tennis
tournament. We're in trouble.
No, I'm just saying it's a bargain. You guys are a bargain.
Okay,
you
and we're a bargain compared to $1 billion. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, if this was up at Adrian's Landing, they'd spent $1.4 million on tennis balls. You know. Wow. So this is
and
nothing.
As far as attendance, we got to show up, people. Yeah, come on. Yeah, it's a fun event.
That's
you
right.
should just go.
I go and I go early and I go with my hot dog. I overspend on a bottle of water. So what?
Look it's at fun. It. Hey. It's outside.
Gotta
you
call,
see people.
Got a call coming in from Andrew in West Haven. But yes, that's the rule, by the way. We're going to be like parents. All right. If we're giving you $1.4 million, you have to go to your tennis tournament in New Haven. You have to eat your vegetables.
Civic pride.
All right. Yeah. Andrew in West Haven, what have you got for us?
I think it was a good idea that the state bought that tournament. However, I think the tournament wasn't marketed properly, which means that they probably changed the tournament director. I mean, it's nothing personal against Dan, but if you didn't live in a certain part of New Haven, you wouldn't even know that it was a tennis tournament going on in the city.
All right, so they need to market it differently. Maybe give it a different brand.
A different brand in the sense where you need to market it maybe towards Hartford and even towards Fairfield County. I think they probably gave up on Fairfield County, thinking that they would gravitate towards the U.S. Open.
You know, my sense is, and this is, you know, somebody who's, you know, been pretty close with some of these people, it's they really in the past few weeks in the past few years, they've been like holding on for dear life. So, you know, I think they've been trying stuff, but, you know, this has been an uphill slog for them. I think it's been very difficult. And
they only have a certain amount of funding. Then you got to market with that money. So, I mean, how much marketing can you do? Marketing is expensive. I mean, maybe it does have to, you know, do a more of a social media thing, because social media right now is sustaining everything. It's sustaining television. It's just, you know, Twitter. If it wasn't for Twitter, no one will watch live TV. But, you know, so
we've got a call from Cindy in Burlington, too. Let's get her on the air. Hi, Cindy. You're on the air.
Hi there, Colin. I think this women's tennis buying, I think it's fantastic for women. It's women's sports. And as a society, we need to get moving. And I think, you know, there's a lot of opportunities now that Connecticut, you know, will own this tennis. And hopefully we can inspire girls and women by having it, because women need to get moving and be inspired.
You know, that is a great, great point. And I will say also, you know, when you're out there at the tournament, they make the players accessible to the fans. They get out there
it's
with
very
them.
Very nice.
And the other thing I just should mention is I'm really shilling for the tournament here, but I just love it. I have to say they invest a lot of, and this was part of their deal when they first got the stadium and everything, but they've stayed with it. And they really do go out, and this addresses the other gentleman's call. They go out into New Haven and they do, you know, they maintain public courts. They offer clinics for inner city kids, after school activities and stuff. I think they're doing a great thing, and I think that is a great point.
I'm just showing my daughter went to the tennis tournament.
He's holding his phone up with a picture. Hold it up to the microphone so people can.
That's great.
But we attended.
That's right.
All right, so we're going to take a break here. We're going to come back for the endorsements. If we have a little time after endorsements, I'd love to get to Binny's topic about Halloween costumes, which I actually feel is she's onto something. But we'll see what kind of time we've got. Let's take a break. We'll come back after this.
A little game of tennis, I'll meet you on the court. To every trick I've ever learned to beat you, I'll resort. So give me, if you're sporty, love, a handicap of 40, love. A little game of tennis, I'll meet you on the court.
Boy, you can really get some deals down here in New Haven. I was out on Temple Street, and a guy sold me a Wimbledon tennis tournament and a Rolex for $750. Today's show was produced by Patrick Scahill, Betsy Kaplan, and me, with help from Jean Amatruda at The Mothership and Jonathan McNichol on Audubon Street. Our interns are Corey Breen and Greg Dyson. Voiceover help in the intro by Greg Hill. The part of Bill Curry was played by Tim Allen. On Monday, a show about ethical consumerism. And now, back to Colin.
And we are in New Haven today, and we're kind of committed to reaching out more and more to the happy people of New Haven because we don't want to become too Hartford-centric. So we'll be back here in New Haven for the Nose 2 weeks from now on October 25th. Mark Oppenheimer and two newcomers will join the panel. And we have two newcomers today who are doing spectacularly. Jose Antonio Candelario and Benny Klein are here with us with the inimitable Bruce Barber, a veteran of many noses. And so Bruce, therefore, Bruce will sort of guide you through the process of endorsing something. So Bruce, tell us what you're going to endorse today.
I want to endorse an academic institution that has educated already three of my children and are finishing up with the fourth.
You're not getting a tuition break for this. I'm more and more suspicious of your motives today.
I did want to mention, and they give us a tuition break. Yeah. This is it's a place called the Hopkins School or Hopkins School. It is the oldest or the second oldest continually operate on, you know, academic institution. It's older than Yale. It's 1660, I believe. Right. But I feel so blessed having sent my kids there. And trust me, it wasn't my idea. It was my wife's. I was going to go public school all the way just for money's sake. But I just see the commitment of the teachers and the kindness and the intelligence of the students blows me away every time I interact with them. And so I just wanted to mention, and the other thing is that they will, Colin, help you out based on need, and that they are having, and nobody told me to do this, but I looked up, they are having their, you know, open house in a week. You can look it up online. But I wanted to say, if you've got kids in the area that are, you know, maybe in public school or whatever, and they're really, really bright and really, really motivated.
And you don't want them to grow up to be the kind of people who poop in laundry machines.
There you go. I'm serious. Do yourself a favor. Go see how they feel. And if it works, you know, they'll help you out.
All right. Jose, what have you got for us?
What can I endorse?
You could endorse the Gravity, but give us kind of a sense of what you obviously did like the movie.
I endorse 3D.
All right.
I endorse 3D, as sickening as it make you. Okay. I will endorse it. I also want to endorse Cross Country for Cancer. I'm going to drive from here to LA in the first 2 weeks of December, and I want to do all these radio stops, and that's what we're calling it. Kia gave us a car and all that good stuff. So, you know, that's my next venture. So I'm going to promote that. And I want to promote the staff here because they never get any love. You know, the guys in the back.
They get plenty of love.
You know, I'm a techie. I know what it is to punch buttons and no love. So shout out to those guys.
Benny, what have you got for us?
Okay, as an avid reader, I read so much people worry about me. They think I don't have a life. I'm endorsing a novel of obsession. It's called My Education by Susan Choi. I love books about the academy. It's sort of like Peyton Place. So this is about a 21-year-old entering graduate school. She becomes fascinated by a charismatic older professor. Now, boundaries are crossed, but they're not what you think. And Susan Choi's other books are great. I devoured them all. She often has a Japanese-American, Asian-American protagonist, which is not that common. My Education, a novel by Susan Choi.
Awesome. Great. I'm going to endorse one of our reasons for coming down here was an email I got from somebody saying, well, I listen to The Nose and I live in New Haven. You're also endorsing things in Hartford. You don't endorse things in New Haven. So we came down here to New Haven. Now we're going to kind of break the rule because there's a couple of quick things I do need to tell you about in Hartford. One of them is, and really, if you're from New Haven, this is worth the trip up and you can combine it with something else. Tomorrow night, there's a production called Nightfall. In Hartford, we have somebody who I really do feel is one of the few people I've ever worked with who I think is a genius and who should get a MacArthur Genius Grant. Her name is Ann Cubberly. She's an amazing kinetic sculptor and has kind of adapted this into a type of theater that, yeah, I guess I could sort of analogize it to some other things that I've seen, but it really is kind of truly remarkable in its own right. So Nightfall, I worked on it last year. It was done in Elizabeth Park. They're moving it to Pope Park this year, partly because Ann really feels as though Pope Park is a place that people from the suburbs are maybe a little less comfortable coming to, but they should come to it. And she's adapted it to the park. So there are these giant puppets, these illuminated figures. There's music. There's dance. Wolfie will be appearing on stage in some kind of simulated radio show. It's something that's really hard to describe, but this is a... its closest kin that I can think of is Paul Winter's solstice festivals that he does at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, because it has something to do with the changing of the seasons as well, typically. So, and I haven't seen this year's production, but it'll be visually stunning. It starts at 5:30. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. It goes for about an hour. So if you did come up from New Haven, you could, you know, pair it up with something else you want to do up in Hartford. And so get there early, bundle up. There's like one section if you're going to sit in blankets, and then there's a further section back if you're going to sit in chairs so you don't block the people on the blankets. Anyway, it's a really nice experience. And tonight in Hartford, the city of Hartford is doing what's called a retail crawl. The thing I want to specifically mention, though, is our own Katie Tularski at 7:30 is hosting what she calls an ear cave. This is a presentation of really interesting audio stuff, a listening session. It's in this new storefront space that we have on Trumbull Street next to the XL Center, sort of kind of on the east side of the XL Center. We're going to be doing more shows from that space as well, including future episodes of The Nose. Her theme tonight is city stories. That one's probably free, too. It usually is for the Ear Cave. So things you can do that don't cost any money. That's 7:30 tonight in our space on Trumbull Street.
I would like to endorse that as well.
All right. So Bruce Barber, Jose Candelario, and Biddy Klein, thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back on Monday with a really interesting show about ethical consumerism. That was recorded live at Watkinson.
I'm Kyone Wolf. It looks like I stepped in some poo. Huh. No, that's chocolate. Milk chocolate. Scott Haney, you want to get in on this, sir?